Woo!
Welcome to the Some Work All Play podcast. We are so happy with you today.
Happy Tuesday.
It's Tuesday.
And I'm over here swirling in peppermint bark and chocolate chip cookies on this Tuesday.
Why are you swirling in bark and cookies?
Because it's the holidays. And that's like all I do on the holidays. It's just like nom, nom, nom. It's delicious and amazing.
Yeah, we did get a lot of cookies from friends, from podcast listeners, from everything else. So we are glycogen loaded right now. It is so good for my energy levels. I was reflecting on just how great I feel, and I'm pretty sure it's that cookie energy.
We are glycogen loaded. I feel like the cookie ratio around here is someone delivers us a plate of cookies,
yeah,
and I eat about like 98% of it, and you have about two bites, and that's usually how it rolls.
That's unfair, though, because you kind of are a bottomless pit.
Yeah,
you are literally the cookie monster, yeah, but with every, and you can just put it down, and it makes you like get even more strong in every single way. Whereas me, I don't know, I have a little bit more of a linear response to cookies. So I limit myself to maybe two cookies a day. You sometimes will go to 20.
Yeah.
And it just makes you stronger.
Okay, maybe I think you're more at like one and I'm at like 10. So we'll like we'll cut the ratio in half, but that's like about the exact ratio that we're going for.
Maybe it is. But we just want to wish you all happy holidays. This is our Christmas special episode. This is coming out on December 26th. We're recording it just the week before so that we have a couple days off. But we're just so excited for the coolest special episode ever.
Oh my gosh. There are so many good secrets and stories and hot takes coming ahead. So yesterday, actually, I went to go prepare for the podcast and I only had like a shorter window than usual. And I was like, oh my gosh, I need to like hammer this. Oftentimes when I review for the podcast, I'm like excited, but I had a touch of dread. But then I started going through like the secrets and the stories and it was the most uplifting thing.
Yeah.
And it made me very joyous. So it put me in the holiday spirit. So I'm so excited.
Usually the podcast review involves digging deep into these scientific articles where we have to read every single word so we don't fuck something up. And today we just got to read secrets from our listeners sent in, which are so cool, so relaxing, so liberating. I can't wait for people to hear them. And a little bit of a temporary break from some scientific studies, though we'll probably work some in as we go.
A temporary break. You actually didn't even want us to have a break because I was on a call yesterday and all of a sudden I just get like 8 text messages from you. And I was like, oh no, I hope Leo is okay. And so I like took a break from the call, went to check my messages. And all I saw in the text was something about like protein and anabolic response. And I was like, okay, Leo is good. This is sexy science blowing up my phone.
Yeah. I don't think I got you any Christmas presents, except I did send you 8 scientific studies at once, which is our love language. That study actually is a good little intro into before we start getting to the main topics of today. A study just came out that we're going to talk about next week on the podcast, all about protein metabolism that totally upends our understanding of it, of the entire field, of the field of nutrition science. So if you're out there, you may have heard that protein should be spaced because above a certain amount, usually classified as about 25 grams, you maximize your body's ability to accomplish protein synthesis. This study came out, took a wild design, totally disproved that thesis based on, at least their findings. And I got so hyped about it. It was a little bit creepy.
I was also so hyped about it too, because one, they were going through kind of like the evolutionary theory as to why they had these hypotheses on protein. And they cited snakes and they did a deep dive on snakes. And I actually don't know shit about snakes.
Yeah.
So I was like, tell me more. So what was their theory? Like, why did they come to this conclusion based on snakes?
Well, I'm actually a little bit confused, not about the study findings. I thought that was pretty direct, but about the motivations of the researchers. Because throughout, it seemed like their hypothesis all along was that they were going to find the results they found, which is very cool. But it's weird sometimes to have a very strong hypothesis that goes directly against conventional wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to make sure this is replicated before I give it too much credence. But what they thought is they started from evolutionary theory, as you mentioned, thinking about something like a snake. A snake will sometimes eat its entire body weight. In fact, after I wrote an article on this study, posted it on Patreon, listeners sent me in videos of snakes eating things.
Whoa, wait, that's actually really cool. I haven't seen them yet.
It's horrifying.
I was going to say, I mean, I think it's kind of cool. And then I was like, the poor mice. That would actually make me very sad about whatever they're ingesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's nightmare fuel for sure. What I got was one listener in particular, Matt out there, sent in a video of a king snake eating a rattlesnake.
Whoa.
Yeah.
They eat their own kin?
Well, it's not kin. It's just...
I mean, it's close enough kin.
Close enough kin. Well, yes. It'd be like us eating like a orangutan or something.
Yeah, actually, as you were saying that about snakes, I was like, maybe my challenge should be to eat my body weight in cookies.
I probably could.
And as we're learning from this article, maybe I'll just like continue to synthesize it over days and weeks and months.
They could be protein cookies.
Yes,
so
exactly.
What happens with the snakes when they eat so much more of their body weight is that they then digest for up to 10 days. So this is why, you know, in nature, it's not just snakes. A lot of other animals do this too. Like even a lion will eat something and then it can get by for a pretty good amount of time. So the idea that humans could only synthesize about 25 grams leading to these protein spacing suggestions seemed a little bit weird because evolutionarily we're in the lineage of other mammals and other creatures and also, you know, not that different metabolically from things like snakes. So they started with that theory, and the way they tested it was they had 36 subjects do pretty hard lifting sessions and then after had them do one of three conditions: a placebo, so 0 grams of protein, 25 grams of protein, the traditional recommendations, and then 100 grams of milk protein all at once. And then they measured them for 12 hours. Over the course of those 12 hours, they did 13 blood tests and 4 muscle biopsies.
Wow.
So it was very cool.
And super rigorous. Actually, can you go into the fact too? So I really liked in the methods, they tagged the protein from the cows.
Yes.
And so they were able to like monitor it and follow it. And I thought that was such a cool methodological design.
Thank you, Megan. It means so much that you are playing into my love language of this protein study.
Oh, this is so cool. We said we weren't going to talk about science, but it wouldn't be the podcast without just like an impromptu discussion and about also, snakes and science.
Before we get to secrets, it's good to have a little bit of the traditional SWAT podcast flair. And since anyone's getting our Christmas episode as their very first one, so what they did to make this truly rigorous is they got a Holstein cow, it's apparently a type of cow that was lactating, thankfully.
Oh, yeah.
And they tagged it with isotopic markers so that the protein that comes out of the cow, so milk comes out of the cow, they then distill that into milk protein. It has these isotopic markers, and then they can see it in blood profiles and in muscle synthesis rates. Very cool. Also makes me very excited for science in general.
Me too. Also, it makes me think that we should just have a Holstein cow around here with isotopic milk. How great would that be? We could do our own experiments and a snake.
Well, we just talked about after you had a baby, you were, you know, we were joking, referring to you as a heifer before, and then
That's true.
Became a cow.
Yes, yes. I graduated.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we should just have tagged my milk.
That would have been so cool.
Actually, you can lactate again, so I could like relactate. Did you know that?
No, wait, even without another kid?
Yeah, you can like, I mean, I would probably have to like use Leo as motivation, like for my brain.
Okay.
But you could like pump and reintroduce lactation after you've already breastfed once. Isn't
that
cool?
Can you use a 35-year-old adult male as motivation? Yeah,
probably.
Does your brain know the difference?
I don't know. I might have to use some brain tricks for that, but I bet you I could.
Okay. Well, we have our assignment for Christmas. Yes, and I know the gift I would like. So they did all these measurements. They also did some IV isotope tracers so they could monitor the amino acid flow. And essentially what they found over the 12 hours is that there was no disproportionate increase in the level of protein wasted, that muscle protein synthesis went up, that the amount utilized went up. Essentially, what their conclusion was is there is no upper limit to the anabolic response of protein intake. So the reason they used 100 grams is not saying you should take 100 grams. That's not what we're saying. What we're saying is probably some of these recommendations that have formed the basis of nutrition theory for decades aren't really something you need to pay attention to. That, like, when it comes to protein intake, something we're very much focused on for athletes, you don't need to think so much about timing and spacing. What you need to think a lot more about is just get enough, whatever way you can. It can be, you know, really big shakes sometimes. It can be a really big meal if you're behind, that it doesn't have to become a chore.
Well, I really like these like conclusions because I thoroughly enjoy eating my body weight in protein and cookies and all these different things and thinking about like the synthesis that happens, not just over the course of a couple hours, but like over an extended period of time. But I have a couple questions for you.
Yeah.
The first, do you think this is going to upend intermittent fasting? So intermittent fasting is kind of based off of theory that like if you have these prolonged periods of time spent fasting, we never recommend this for athletes.
Yeah.
It can be dangerous to mess around with, that it causes increased longevity. But if the body is continuing to have these like longer and extended periods of protein synthesis than we once thought.
Yeah.
Do you think it has any like risk of upending what we think about intermittent fasting and the longevity gains?
Yeah, I think it probably indicates that what some people call intermittent fasting is slightly different than they're thinking it is, especially the athletes that do that with high protein.
We need a new term like intermittent snaking.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely different.
I think.
Basically, the reason this one's so cool to me is that it introduces an entirely new area of like physiology to think about when we're also thinking about adaptation in response to protein intake and the anabolic processes involved in that. So it can affect things like intermittent fasting. It can affect things like, you know, adaptation to training. A big question I have personally is, okay, this is an acute setting. mm-hmm. How will it change in a chronic setting?
Yes,
so like, let's say you're doing these types of protein doses, not 100 grams, but 60, let's say, something that's over the limit, but more reasonable, more consistently. Will that start to have different responses in physiology? Also, what happens if, you know, you're doing other meals, like how does this compare to 33, 33, 33 across, you know, three meals? Basically, there's lots of unanswered questions. But what it really points out to me is that sometimes when we think we know what we're talking about, we don't always. And even us, we've done protein episodes on here where we have parroted some of the conventional wisdom. And it's always good to push back against the conventional wisdom.
Well, there's certainly a pushing back against the conventional wisdom, but I would love for this to be replicated because
yes,
there is
definitely.
A whole body of conventional wisdom. And there have been rigorous studies that have showed the opposite. And so this is like the first, actually, I don't know if it's the first, but it's the main rigorous paper that I have seen that has this like extensive methodology and evolutionary theories. But I think we need more. And so I think my brain is like, this is really cool. This is exciting, but give me more snakes.
How do you, would you characterize my response when I first saw this study?
Oh, you were aroused.
I was so happy.
You were so happy.
Just because it's science. Like, I mean, I don't care about the protein part. I do to a certain extent because like sometimes for me, for example, I get behind on protein overall. I'll double scoop my protein, but I was always scared to recommend that to people. And now I think it's like maybe the most practical recommendation you can give is, hey, if you're seeing that you're maybe under 100 grams of protein a day, which happens to me sometimes, I'm just like, fuck, what do I do? Because I know I need that to adapt, especially as I age. Well, instead of doing one scoop, just do two scoops at once. That way I don't have to do an afternoon scoop.
I love it. And throw in some, actually before this podcast episode, you threw in some matcha powder into your protein shake. You're like, I got to be turned on.
Talk about arouse.
Yes. Yeah.
But the coolest part to me is not the practical recommendations. It's more that the conventional wisdom can be disrupted in this fundamental way for something that affects all of us, which is protein metabolism. And if it's like that, what can happen with training theory, let's say? Like all of these things we think, who knows? And to me, like probing that and also questioning our biases is very, very fun. So yes, this study got me extremely excited.
Well, I love that you just said, who knows, which got me very excited too. I love like when things are unanswered, but I also love that you use the word disrupted because to me, that's like very Silicon Valley tech type of language.
Yeah.
And I feel like the authors would actually like be, it seemed like they had a little bit of bias. This is a very rigorous study, very methodological. But again, like I think
yeah. So my spotty senses went up.
Yes. Yeah.
It was well done. It was in Cell Reports Medicine. If you want to go check it out yourself, I wrote on Patreon, actually, I did a quick hitter summary. We do that all the time up there. So patreon.com/swap, SWAP, also where we got our secrets today. Subscribe there to support the podcast. But the reason my spotty senses went up was that as you're reading it, just part of it is like, this seems too good to be true.
Mm-hmm.
Just all the results are within line of the hypothesis that goes against the conventional wisdom. There isn't even a little bit that goes against it. It goes against that hypothesis. And to me, that's a little scary. And then I saw the Twitter of the lead author, who seems like a brilliant guy, does a lot of work in protein metabolism.
Was he jacked?
He was. Well, that's actually a great question.
Yes.
I didn't look at his pictures.
You should have been like, show me your biceps.
Yeah, yeah.
This is like biceps. This is the second hypothesis. This is the secondary analysis.
Also, he's probably been instituting whatever he's studying.
Exactly, yeah.
So this guy's muscle, his hypertrophy or whatever, his biceps can block out the sun, Megan.
I know. We need to like have a picture of him and then Huberman and then see what's up.
So yeah, I think the study is really interesting. I think it'll inform, you know, a lot of what we think about nutrition theory in the future. So if you're out there, go check out the study and, you know, maybe check out my article on it too.
Yeah. And final point is that nutrition science is actually very hard to conduct
Definitely
and do.
Not.
And this was like methodologically rigorous, but I think there's a lot of nutrition science research out there. I feel like, you know, now we're talking about two things. Like we've had findings on the podcast before that are in opposition to this.
Yeah.
The amount that happens within nutrition research is so common.
Also, all the subjects in this study were men.
Yes.
So that could be totally different. They were doing weightlifting, not running, could be totally different. Like you said, needs to be replicated a number of times. I'm sure this will face a lot of criticism from people that might be in the more conventional fields. But man, it's so arousing.
Oh, it was sexy.
Yeah.
It was deserving of 8 text messages.
Okay,
when I got
that. Good. I'm glad you liked your Christmas present.
Yes.
Now prepare to lactate. Okay. So we have the best episode for you today. The main thing we're going to do here is a list of secrets plus stories, plus hot takes. But just to give you a quick primer, what the secrets are, they're motivated by one of my favorite podcasts called Endless Honeymoon with comedians Moshe Kasher and Natasha Leggero, where they get secrets from their listeners that are things that are meant to unburden the secret teller. Mm-hmm. So we're all carrying these things, and by letting them out into the world, hopefully they release a little bit of pressure. So we're going to do that. A lot of them are about running. Some of them are about totally other things. We're just going to have fun with it, comment on it, give people hard times, give people love, good mix of everything.
And we won't share everyone's secret because we had like 35 to 40 pages of amazing secrets. Like it was an overwhelming volume of secrets, and we responded to all of them on Patreon, but they were great. Also, as I was going through and like categorizing these secrets, there were some clear themes emerging. Yeah. And one of them was body fluids.
Interesting.
Yeah. As you're saying, like, let out your secrets. It's like, let out those fluids. I mean, it's actually, I mean, I think a big like conclusion I had is just how much shame we carry around associated with body fluids. And it's like, nah, they're just fluids. Well, fluids
are
okay.
You know what my secret is? I actually think I mentioned this on the podcast before, but it's seasonal, so it's appropriate. Is every time we play Let It Go from Frozen, the entire first verse into the chorus, you can just imagine a runner that's trying to get to a porta potty. And then it ends as, you know, they're dealing with it. They're dealing with these conflicted feelings about trying to get to the porta potty, shame, things like that. And then they get to the chorus, which is, let it go, let it go. Can't hold it back anymore.
And then it's so sweet. It feels so good from there. But you know what? The amount of like shame that I think people would have after that let it go moment, based off of the secrets we have, is high.
Yeah, you got to own it like Queen Elsa.
Oh, yeah. You got to like be like, there's going to be a flower that's going to grow there in the future.
Hell yeah. Okay. Do you want to get straight into secrets?
Let's do it. Okay.
Awesome. Here's the first one. It is not about running, but a really good one. Megan titled this Melatonin. Sometimes I crush 20 to 25 milligrams of melatonin and hide them in the coffee grounds of the morning brew when I have house guests that are rude, awful in any way, and especially when they wake up before me, drink all the coffee, and don't start a new pot. It's great. The melatonin kicks in after the caffeine wears off, and everyone takes a midday nap.
Holy shit was my first response. But also the secret got even better because it came with photo evidence of just various pictures of their house guests just absolutely passed out and snowed.
Yeah.
Snowed is actually like the medical term when like you like overdo anesthesia and it's really hard to wake someone up. And I would say these house guests were full-scale snowed.
Full-scale snowed.
Yeah.
Just straight yoked.
Yeah.
Just out of it.
Can you imagine? Actually, I'm like pretty melatonin sensitive. Like I take 3 milligrams and I am like not even lasting for 5 minutes of a Netflix show.
Yeah.
I can't imagine drinking coffee with melatonin. I'd be out.
I like this a lot because it's holiday season. And I think there's a general like theme that most of the time, if you see family or whatever, it's like 15 minutes of being like, this is the best thing ever. And then 5 hours of just being like, oh my God, where is the melatonin? Someone give me a tranquilizer, Darce.
I feel like there needs to be like a statute of limitations on the number of like days house guests can spend at your house around the holidays.
I like that.
Yeah. And I think strategically about that. We've decided like 3 to 5 days is a very reasonable and long amount of time to have house guests.
A little bit too much, I would say. We would also say we are officially against drugging anyone.
Don't do this at home. This reminds me actually, do you remember the drink Four Loko that was like, so it was a high dose of alcohol and caffeine within the same drink. And it was actually banned because it was dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, don't do this. I actually remember, so growing up, my grandfather suffered from alcoholism for like 60 years.
Yeah.
And I remember once being a high school student and like opening the fridge in his house.
Yeah.
And there was just like 60 contraband Four Locos. Oh, no. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? Oh. And that was at the point that I really realized, I was like, something is going on here. And this is really sad and really hard and also funny because my 75-year-old grandfather has like all of these contraband Four Locos. But Four Locos reminds me of this situation. Oh,
how did that make you feel when you saw the Four Locos and had the realization about your grandpa?
It's like a mix. I mean, I think it was interesting because my family never like talked about it openly. Like it was so obvious to anyone that spends like more than a few hours around him.
Yeah.
But I think everyone like had shame to talk about it. But then the Four Locos was like the clear tip off. I mean, he was legitimately going to drink all of those.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a beautiful reflection in that the whole point of this is to take off some of the shame.
Yes.
Having said, of all the secrets we got, this is the one that I'm like, I think it's okay. Melatonin, part of me thinks melatonin is a little bit like CBD in that it's a total placebo that does nothing?
No, no. I mean, it for sure works. Oh,
but I take my 3 milligrams of melatonin every night, 1 hour before bed, and I go from being sky high, just so happy off my matcha. And an hour later, I'm just like, okay, I can no longer keep my eyes open.
Also, you dose your melatonin like an addict. So you have car melatonin and it hangs out in the like the front seat of our car.
I do center console melatonin.
So that if we're going out for like a late night dinner, you can have the melatonin exactly 1 hour before bedtime. Yeah. And then you chew on it like a, yeah, it's very interesting.
I'm science driven.
Yes.
I don't swallow these pills. Yes. I chew them and put them under my tongue.
You munch them.
It's like dip. Yeah. You know, like, I don't know if you had people in your high school, but I grew up in the country, and where I'm from, people would play like third base in baseball with dip in. And so it goes under the tongue. That's what I do with my melatonin. Yeah. Okay, on to the next one. This is called Icy Hot. At mile 60 of a 100 miler this year, I changed clothes and was very much looking forward to being in dry clothes after sweating all day. I changed in the porta potty. After changing, I stretched out on the ground on the top of a towel, and upon getting up, was distressed to find my ass was wet. With no other clothes to change into, I pressed on, but not before stopping a quarter mile down the road and requesting my pacer feel my ass to see if it was actually wet. It was not wet. I had, in fact, picked up some communal Icy Hot from the porta potty toilet seat. If that's not ultra running in a nutshell, I don't know what is.
Ultra running, man. That's epic.
So this is Icy Hot from like the toilet?
Yeah, I imagine someone probably put it on their hamstrings and then sat on the toilet seat. Oh. And then this athlete sat on it after and got the communal Icy Hot. Can you imagine?
Yeah. Well, you know, if that happens in an ultra running porta potty, at the porta potties I go to in like the park, it's probably chlamydia. Those crabs jump 10 feet high. So there's no reason in trying to stand above the toilet.
Okay, so here's how I get around this.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Is I actually never sit on porta potty seats because once I had a bad experience where I went into a porta potty and it was dark and I definitely sat on something that was not as great as Icy Hot.
A snake?
It was just the regurgitation of a snake.
Okay, okay.
So
I
squat.
Yeah.
On porta potties now and it's great.
It's
a little workout.
You totally missed my point, Megan. Those crabs jump 10 feet high. Yeah. You don't need to worry about squatting. I think you're just...
I stand. Okay. You know, I'm yeah.
You would need to be like Tom Cruise in the first Mission Impossible, where he's coming in on the rope from like 20 feet above. And that's how you would need to go to the bathroom to totally escape what's on the tops of those toilet seats.
That's a good point. But maybe this is like the case for squatting and porta potties.
Yeah.
Especially too, because at mile 60, I feel like once you sit in the chair, you're not getting back up from the chair.
But I also feel like the squat could lead to cramping.
That's a good point, actually.
Actually, my take is that to go the opposite way, and this is an intervention for you.
You stand.
No, I do not stand. I'm saying everyone should just sit down in whatever it is and accept your fate. Because I think so much in life, we're like, oh, we can control this thing. Like I'm going to have anxiety. I'm going to wash my hands 8 million times to avoid every germ. Instead of doing that, what if we just put ourselves in it?
Well, I've actually seen you kind of do that sometimes because I've seen you just go and like to hoist yourself down, to lower yourself down on toilet seats when you're sore, you just put both your hands on the outside lid and then lower yourself down. I'm just like, oh, fuck.
We don't have a machine to do dips in this house.
Yes.
So I use the sides of the porta potty, Megan, as it was destined to be used. Okay, next up here. Oh my gosh, I love this one. Megan called this video game. After years of not playing video games, I conceded to my friend's suggestion and started playing Baldur's Gate 3, which is amazing. But now I've developed a fierce crush on one of the characters, Astarion, and playing on my computer gets dangerously close to a different kind of play altogether. And being a professional, serious-looking woman, I don't think I can tell anyone.
Well, I got really excited. So we don't play video games, but I was like, sign me up. I want to experience this. But I did Google Astarion.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's how you say his name, but did you know he's a 200-year-old vampire with silver hair?
Oh, I mean, I think about all the experience he has.
He was sexy as shit.
He knows how to, you know, they say it's not about the size of the boat, it's about the motion in the ocean. Yeah. His ocean motion must be fantastic after 200 years.
Actually, he had motion in his ears. He had like his vampire ears. That was only thing I was like, I don't know if I can bang vampire ears, but the entirety of him was quite sexy.
Okay,
so I totally co-sign and understand. And I kind of want to start playing Baldur's Gate 3 now.
Yeah. I mean, it is interesting to think about how far video games have probably come.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, back when I used to play on my Nintendo 64, playing GoldenEye or whatever, it would take a lot to get a crush on one of those characters.
I was going to say, none of those characters were fuckable in any sense. It depends on your hormones.
There are some of these guards, yeah. Megan. They're just carrying their little gun, walking into doors over and over. And I was like, I like that. They don't think too. They don't have, you know, that was the thing. It's like, they don't have anxiety because they're not smart enough to. But I think that this is pretty cool to think about where this whole world is going. It kind of touches on our AI discussion that we had last week. And where I'm pointing out that I think the barrier between what human relationship is and what a meaningful relationship is starting to wear down, very much in the line with like the movie Her, but much less like bad for the individuals that are going through it. I mean, I think there's a future where people can find, you know, companionship that uplifts them through what essentially amounts to, you know, video game characters, but we won't be able to tell the difference between them and real humans.
Well, I'd be really curious because I feel like in like video game design, and I imagine also like the reality of AI right now too, is that it's primarily like male driven in terms of who's behind it and who's designing it. Like I've heard that in like video game companies, it's like 90% men and 10% women.
Definitely,
and so I feel like the first iterations of these like things, robots with souls or whatever that are coming out that are going to be fuckable are all going to be like from the male perspective.
And
I was so excited actually to see a sexy male because like, I wonder like who created this, and it gave me faith and hope in video game and potentially like AI future.
So I like this. I just think, you know, one note is that how good would Asterion be if he had 200-year-olds double D boobs?
Can you imagine?
Let's get the male gaze going, even on the male characters.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's actually one thing is a lot of the male characters are also designed from the male gaze.
Yeah, exactly. But then I was like, maybe this was designed from the male gaze, but either way.
Oh, who knows?
Maybe I have a like stereotype. Maybe I'm like a bro gaze and I'm like, I'd bang that bro.
So we totally uplift this. Probably a good sign for your hormones, health, all of that. Have fun with your video game characters.
Actually, yeah, we should measure testosterone levels after playing Baldur's Gate 3 and before and see if there's any bump.
Yeah. I mean, you ever watch like, oh man, this joke isn't going to work.
Oh, just go for it.
I identified this because like, have you ever watched Bluey? You seen that dad dog? I specified to everyone out there, it was the dad dog, not the children dogs.
Okay. The lactating children's dogs.
All right, we're going to have a tone shift for the next secret. This is called ED, eating disorder.
Also, I love that I didn't mean for these titles. This is just my own brain to understand what they were. If I knew you were going to read the titles, I would have given them much more creative titles.
Oh, but I actually like the titles because they're direct and
it's grounding.
It helps people understand what they're going to get into. I know I'm not supposed to care what I weigh. I don't own a scale because of my history with eating disorders. But every few months at the gym, when no one is in the locker room, I strip down at lightning speed and jump on the scale to see the number. Nothing makes me feel as embarrassed as the fact that I hide this habit.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I think my heart goes out to this listener and how hard this is. I also wonder too if like this brings me to like exposure context, and I wonder if there's a way to like circumvent around the gym so that you avoid the scale and avoid even like, I feel like so often when there's like something right there, it's actually really hard to like have the ability to say no to it. And I wonder if there's a way that you can like go the other way around the showers or like skip the bathrooms or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
I have a number of them, as you can imagine. So at first I think, you know, reiterate the SWOT philosophy here, which is scales are not helpful unless you're doing something directed by a doctor or expert. Throw them out. Do not have them at home and avoid them when you can.
Yeah. I was going to say like avoid exposure. Yes. Yeah.
But I have to identify with this a little bit too much.
I was about to say the same thing. Have you done this?
So what I do, and this points out how I still carry some level of what you could consider disorder just in everyday life. I only will do it after I've been in the sauna for an extended period of time.
Yes.
And then what I'll do is—
Do you do it naked?
Uh-huh. I'll strip off. But the thing is, and then I'll be like, quit. I'll try to be quick, right? Because I don't want to just be like, you know, parading around the 24-hour fitness bathroom.
You should own that shit.
I mean, I should, but I just don't. Like, it's just not something I do. But the problem is, at the 24-hour fitness here, at least, they have one of those scales that's like, okay, I'm not 1,000 pounds. Okay, I'm not 0 pounds. Okay, I'm not 900. And you just have to come into the middle with like the old school weights, like you're using an abacus to weigh yourself.
I feel like it's every gym scale. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So I'm just sitting there naked, like trying to figure out this machine, having no idea what I weigh because it's been so many years, and just like totally just, I don't know, humping the machine. It's terrible.
Well, I've had a similar thing. So I used to go to Colorado Athletic Club here in Boulder. It's definitely more upscale than the 24-hour fitness. It's a pretty nice gym. But I would have the same thing. Like every once in a while, I would walk by the scale. And I feel like I've actually truly shed— I had disordered eating in college, and I've like truly shed that like notion or like the ideas surrounding
it. I'm totally not joking about 20 cookies. I didn't want to downplay your 10 cookies, Megan. Yeah. But you will
really
go
like cookies.
You'll go through an entire thing of shredded cheese in a day and a half. No lie. So I totally uplift it. Very impressed by what you can do.
And I'm proud of that.
Yes. And, and we own it.
Yes. We own it. It's like, I love it. I want to be like a strong ass woman. And I truly feel that. But that is the hard part actually about scales, is like, is there a number? Because like for me, I want to be a strong ass woman, but yeah. I think there's always a part of the brain. It's like PRs or something where like you want to see something lower. And I think that's the problem with scales is that there's never an ideal number. Like I think the number is always going to trigger something in the brain.
Yeah.
And that's why it's not worth doing it. But that is to say that I've done it because like in the locker room, sometimes I'm like, well, it's there.
Yeah.
I should do it. But for whatever reason, like even though I feel comfortable in my skin, my body and what I eat, I also feel the need for no one to be around because I'm like, I shouldn't be doing this.
Interesting.
So I totally hear the listener.
Yeah. And just know you have no reason to feel bad about hiding this habit. Try to control it, understand where it's coming from. But also this type of thing, it's something we all share or whatever it is. Like this is just a metaphor for a bunch of different things in life.
Actually, so many of these secrets, as I was going through them, I was like, check, been there, done that. Check, been there, done that. And I think it's just human existence too.
Most of them, I'm like 10 times worse. The only one that isn't is slipping drugs into people's coffee. Okay, next up is called long run anxiety. My anxiety to run long often has me doing loops close to home. I often run up one side of the street, then back down the other side, so I'm no more than 500 meters from home, or skipping the long run altogether. Last weekend, I faked an illness, as I hate to admit my anxiety.
Well, first of all, they should really create a local legend status on their loop. They would own that forever, which is really cool. So, I mean, I think maybe you should create a Strava segment out of this loop. But also, my heart goes, I mean, I feel like we're both prone and we don't necessarily have like diagnosed anxiety, but I think we very much understand anxiety and like where these thoughts come from and sending a lot of love.
Yeah. And I mean, one thing with this is I love routes close to home.
Oh yeah. We're notorious for running circles and circles and circles.
Yeah. We have a 1.2 mile loop that goes around our house. So you're never that far from home. And I've been known to do that 10 times in a row. And Megan taught me the joy of this. You just choose a little itty bitty loop near your house and just keep doing it over and over. So what I like about this one is it's out and backs.
Oh, yes.
500 meters. That's pretty cool. So I actually think this is a great way to reframe this. Instead of thinking, oh, I can't go far away from home, be like, oh, I'm actually just trying to harness mindfulness. Because what more meditative state can you do than when your brain can tune out of any details of the terrain? It's like, you know, every nook and cranny and crack in the pavement or whatever else you're going through. So your brain can just go other places and you can come back to center and do all these things. In fact, this might just be the ticket to a psychedelic experience on your long run.
Oh, shoot. I was thinking a Biggs backyard ticket, but both of those actually work well too. But my thought too is like audiobooks and podcasts are amazing to get out of my own head. And I wonder like maybe just venture like a mile away from home, listen to an audiobook and podcast and like be distracted by that and see what happens as you gradually, like I would incrementally do it. And it's kind of fun even to think about that. Like go a mile, then 2 miles, then 3 miles and see what happens.
I think the problem with anxiety though is it doesn't work in like exposure therapy.
Linear fashion. Yes.
Sometimes it does though. Sometimes for sure. But like, I think the hard part about it is that usually it's so not grounded in logic to begin with. And then it grounds itself in logic from there. But the mix of like total rationality with total irrationality that all of our anxieties can present essentially makes them really hard to pin down. And that's why with something like this, the secret isn't to be like, how do I solve it? For the most part, though, think about different ways and strategies. It's to be like, dude, I love that about myself. Like, that's totally great. If I can only go 500 meters from home, hell yeah. And, you know, with your long run, you have nothing to fear because, hey, if you don't make it into a long run, a 10-minute run is awesome too.
Oh, I love that. Also, I feel like for me, it's like love is like at the far right end of the spectrum of acceptance. For me, there's like a peacefulness that comes first.
Yeah.
And that's like the necessary first step. And then it takes a couple of weeks. And then I maybe get to love.
No matter what it is, not judging yourself is kind of one of those first steps. So like, don't judge yourself, including about judging yourself. Next up, I'm not going to read Megan's title for this one.
Oh, I'll read it. Tampon change. I'll read it too.
Go for it.
The most epic yet strategically perfect tampon change ever was at 1 a.m., 100 yards before an aid station during a 100 miler in 15 degree temps. I struggled in the pitch dark to keep my fingers from freezing, not only because I needed the mobility, but also because I needed to yelp when the applicatorless hot swap happened. P.S. All turned out well, and I was able to sanitize and dispose of that hot mess tampon the moment I walked into the aid station. Okay, this is impressive.
I also like the way you read it, because the way what you said there is I needed to yelp when the hot swap happened.
Oh, it said I needed to not yelp.
Not yelp. But
yes.
You know what would be really awesome?
What?
A big old yelp.
Oh, it would be great. Be like, huzzah! Actually, that's like the force that you need to insert a tampon.
Exactly.
That's what they should tell 12-year-old girls. I always like, the first time I did it, I was like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
I mean, is it the right hole? Just make sure you know the right hole before you say huzzah.
I still ask myself all the time. Yeah. I'm not 100% sure. I got to be honest. That's my secret.
I mean, it would be really hard to fuck that up.
I mean, I don't know, Megan. They never tell you. No one ever tells you in life.
This is what they should tell you in sex ahead. Like, where's the right hole?
Yes.
The important practical things.
You know what they should do? It should be like golf, where they have the big pin in the hole. That would help all of our problems.
But then, I mean, if there's a pin in there, how do you...
No, no, you take the pin out when you're putting.
Oh. High five. That was great. Also, this person's Strava file must be really impressive.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, actually, when you get like a really fast poop on Strava, it's amazing because there's like only a 20-second offset in your run.
Yeah.
I'm sure this is like a 15-second tampon offset. I'm
I like what you said about huzzah being the term for it. Because like the reason that we've grasped onto huzzah so much, partially because it's fun to say, but partially because it's an exhale. It's so good when you reach the top of a hill to be like, huzzah. It's something that we do when we're together, when I'm running with Drew, whenever we get to the top of the hill, we say huzzah. So reminder to everyone out there, when you get to the top of the hill, say huzzah. It's the most satisfying thing you could ever do. And what you're saying is maybe say it other times too.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know my secret?
What?
So I can like wear tampons in normal life.
Yeah.
But now like in this postpartum period, I can't run with them in because they fall out.
Oh.
I know. Isn't that like, and I don't know. I actually need to like ChatGPT this to see if it's normal. I'm sure it might be postpartum, but like, like all of them fall out. It's a problem. I like I've been on a few long runs and I'm like, what do I do with this? Like, tampon that's fallen off and I want to litter. So I just like stash it in my pack or waist belt, carry it back.
I'm
really committed to the environment.
Great. It's kind of like when someone hits one of those golf shots that goes into the hole and then bounces out.
That is the postpartum tampon experience. Yeah, it's a problem. More women should talk about this.
I don't want to tag this joke too hard. So
you can tag it.
No. We're going to end it there. It's good. I'm a little bit...
Putting can be the tag.
Okay, perfect. you know what, Megan? I fully uplift the entire back nine.
Oh, great. My back nine or like the proverbial back nine?
Oh, yours.
Okay, thanks.
And the front nine. Par threes across the board. Okay, this next one is called pacing complications. Okay, I have what is maybe a combined secret and story for the holiday episode. It is potentially also a lesson of what not to do in terms of race strategy. But here it goes. I hooked up with a friend one time at the very end of college, thinking it was a one-time casual thing. College ended, we immediately moved across the country from each other, and I inadvertently proceeded to harbor a crush for the entire year while only seeing this person a handful of times. We are both runners. I decided, because I am at times not a very thinking person, that it would be a great idea to have this person, for whom I had unprofessed feelings, come pace me for 20 miles in the back half of a 100-miler, a race I'd been intending to do for years. So said person flies across the country. My two nights of sleep before the race are absolutely wrecked because I am constantly thinking about my unprofessed feelings. And then the night before the race, we both confess to having mutual feelings! Exclamation point. Then, during the race, our miles together are a blissful confessional of all the feelings we'd stored up for the entire year. However, I did DNF the race due to mismanaged nutrition and subsequent diminished willpower. Sad, but positive memories and lessons learned. After the race, said person and I began dating, but our dating ended, unfortunately. It wasn't anyone's fault, just complications of life. And now I feel that this race might be tainted for me. I want to go back next year, but I am scared that the course will feel like a big reminder of everything that we went through together. I guess as much as this is my story secret, it is also me asking for advice on what you would tell me about trying the race again in the future. Should I give it a couple years off? Say screw it and sign up for next year and try to get my revenge? Any thoughts/reactions warmly accepted and appreciated. Thanks for being beacons of positivity and hilarity. Love you both so much.
Oh, heck yes. I think huzzah is my answer. Go for it.
Yeah.
But not even for revenge. I feel like sometimes revenge, maybe if that's like a good emotional context for you for racing, do it. But otherwise, I feel like it should be like huzzah, like this is for me type of situation.
Yeah. I mean, basically all this is a story of is a relationship that didn't work out, which is like every relationship.
Also, we've seen this exact story play out so many times, even at some of like the biggest races with athletes like winning races.
Definitely. Yeah.
Like the person that they are no longer with is like in all of their race photos. And we've seen this like a number of times.
Yeah. And I mean, this is just life.
Like, yeah, it happens.
And I think ended relationships and just in general shouldn't be like bad things for us emotionally long term, because it's a thing that you learn from. I mean, I guess like there has to be a line between like a successful relationship being like only relationships that end in death, or, you know, death of one of the partners, which is essentially what like a lot of people would frame a good marriage as. Like, no, relationships that end like this can be good. Also, divorces can be good relationships. Like, we shouldn't judge on this time scale of like decomposition.
Actually, when you're saying decomposition, were you teeing this up for me? You have a big smile on your face.
I was.
Okay, so on both of our runs this morning, we both independently listened to Noah Kahan's new song. What is it, like Everything?
Everything Everywhere. Do you want to scroll up? We actually have it.
We actually have the lyrics. Let's scroll up.
From our Stravas earlier today.
Okay. It's everywhere, everything.
Close enough.
Close enough. We got it. Okay. But here is the line about decomposition and love. And I would love to know how he workshopped it. The line is, till we're food for the worms to eat, till our fingers decompose, keep my hand in yours.
Till our fingers decompose, keep my fingers in your, blah, blah, blah. You get the idea.
But can you imagine like workshopping? Do you think it's tongue in cheek or do you think it's serious?
I think it's a mix. I think that he references horror movies early.
Yes.
So it's essentially trying to put an interesting, smart spin on the idea of a relationship that lasts forever. So I think it's a mix. I think it's all very self-aware and it's a very good, like, it's kind of a banger hit.
Oh, it is a banger hit. Actually, I'm surprised you said it. You're like not, Noah Kahan I would typically classify as like sad boy music.
Uh-huh.
And that's like the opposite of your vibes. So I'm kind of shocked that you like the song.
I liked it because it involved decomposition.
Yeah. You know,
it's like as soon as we start talking about the abyss, I'm like, all right, you won me over here. It's like, I don't like the sad boy music that's about like, oh, I'm playing an acoustic guitar and now we're going to break up and I'm really in my feelings and this matters a lot. I like the sad boy music that's like, you know,
We're eaten by worms.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my God. Worm food? I'm fucking in.
Yeah. Also, like, if you have a big protein meal, if you're eating like 100 grams of protein before that happens, the worms are in for a treat.
It's true.
Yeah, I know. The worms are in for a Holstein cow. It's the great circle of snake evolution.
Yeah, but like, you know, the whole point is like Noah's idea of relationships there that he's bringing across doesn't have to be what a successful relationship is. So when it comes to your own experiences, immediately reclaim that power. You know, yes, you need a processing period, but 1 year, plenty of time to get back out there, be sad about things that were lost or could have been, but also be happy about things that you learned and grew from and get it back out there and crush that 100.
Also, I do think it's relevant for thinking about like pacing considerations because there are certain, like, I feel like for you, I am so comfortable with you, but I feel like there would have been a time early in our relationship that I would have like died in 100 for you.
Yes.
And I feel like there is a good like sweet spot there. And it's important to think about like the relationship of the person that's going to pace you.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know which one is better now. Like me being super for performance.
Yeah.
I know it's better for love. Me being like super comfortable with you or me being like, oh, we'll do anything for my boy to my own body.
I don't know. I think, you know, sometimes you just got to push to you almost die.
Yeah. Exactly.
I wouldn't have let you actually die.
No. What actually, it brings me up. So the other night, a friend made us dinner and it was like a delicious dinner, but it was also the hottest dinner of all time. It was so spicy.
And it was a curry. And I am not great with spice. And this was absolutely 5-star spice. Like it would be, you go to a Thai restaurant and you say them, give the secret spice. It was that hot.
But we love our friend. Yes. And so we sat there eating the entire bowl. And I feel like that is like the ideal pacer. Someone that you would just be like, I'm going to eat all of this hot sauce bowl for. And like run that like analysis in your head by whoever you're choosing.
Yeah. Definitely not going to be standing above the porta potty after You're going to be all the way, you're going to dive in it. You're going to be like Greg Louganis, just jumping headfirst into that porta potty. Okay, we're going to do a quick palate cleanser here because I want to read one more set of song lyrics that are the flip side of love because I think it will make people feel better about breakups they've had.
Oh my God, this is the most empowering breakup song. Also, music is getting so good right now.
It goes in waves.
It does go in waves. So right now there's like a comedy flair in music. Like, yeah. I don't know if Noah Kahan's music was comedy or like what, I don't know.
It's extremely self-aware.
Yes, it's extremely self-aware, but sometimes like when you're being satirical, I can't actually tell the difference between like satire and like your real thoughts.
Uh-huh.
And that's the same vibe I have with Noah Kahan.
Okay, I like it though.
Yes.
Well, you love me.
Oh, I do love you.
So you love Noah.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, maybe.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't even know what he looks like. He's probably great.
He probably looks like a stereo.
Okay. So this is a song from Renee Rapp. I had never heard her music, but we had watched and talked on the podcast actually about this show, Sex Lives of College Girls.
Such a good show.
On HBO. She was one of the main characters in that. She left that show. But if I knew she had music like this in her, I'd have been like, get off this show and start making more music. The song is called Tummy Hurts. And this is the chorus. Now my tummy hurts. He's in love with her. But for what it's worth, they'd make beautiful babies and raise them up to be a couple of fucking monsters, just like their mother and father. Eventually, 2043, someone's going to hurt their little girl like their daddy hurt me.
That's an amazing lyric.
What a mic drop
that is
lyric.
Such a mic drop. Actually, do you think any of like your exes have looked at Leo and just been like, that little fucker? He is really cute.
I don't think exes. I don't think I had a prolific enough experience. I don't think any of my exes have ever thought about me again.
You didn't bang enough for that to be relevant.
No, I don't know.
You couldn't find the holes. You couldn't putt. Just kidding.
I think sometimes, like, I don't know. Do you ever think about that? Like, if people from your past think about you at all? Not relationships necessarily.
But, well, I'm sure, like, they definitely do for both. I mean, that's just, like, you randomly think about people.
I don't – but do they, though?
Probably not.
I don't know. Sometimes I'm like, I don't know if I made a big impression.
Oh, you for sure did.
Did I?
Yeah. You make it – you're, like – okay, you're a very impressionable person.
Impressionable?
Yeah. Wrong word.
Also.
Yes.
Yeah.
Actually, it kind of works both ways. It does. You're like, give me 100 grams of protein.
You know what else works both ways?
What?
Renee Rapp.
Yes.
She's bisexual.
That is true. We uplift that.
We uplift that fully. No bisexual secrets on here, but just a very good statistic and piece of information I got from Wikipedia today, because her character on Sex Lies of College Girls was gay. And so I wanted to look it up because this song was about a guy.
Yes. And actually, I was curious about that too. Yeah.
So brought it all home. So landed that plane perfectly.
Actually, I thought you said statistic. Were you going with like what percentage of the population is bisexual?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah. I assume it's actually a lot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's probably tough to know, but.
I'm surprised we didn't get a bisexual secret, actually. It makes me sad. Yeah. I'm sure there's one out there. Someone tell us one.
Well, I'm sure some of these secrets came from bisexual people.
Yeah, just exactly. Just
defining enough to be the secret,
exactly.
Which is great.
Yeah,
that's
awesome.
Okay, next up is this one. At 41 years old, I was recently diagnosed as autistic. It's been a swirl of emotions, but overall feels like relief to have an explanation for my lifelong feelings of social anxiety and sensory issues. It feels like putting on the right prescription lenses for the first time and helps me understand why running by myself through the forest for hours feels so good.
Oh, I love that this person has found like solace in running through the forest. Yeah. How amazing is that? Also, every time I run through forest, there's the random forest machine learning algorithm. I'm like, I'm running through a random forest.
What is the random forest?
It's a machine learning algorithm. And okay. I like every time I'm through a forest, I'm like, this random forest is amazing. So
it's perfect.
Yeah. Hopefully it's soothing to the soul like it is for me.
Yeah. And I think what's so cool about this is just, you know, all of us are going through our own journeys, right? And sometimes a lot of the things that maybe we could have figured out about ourselves young, we don't really start to fully know until later for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And that idea of self-exploration can continue and continue and continue until like we decompose, I think is amazing. So this is awesome and just such a cool reflection on the human experience.
And acceptance too. I'd actually be really curious to know if like after this diagnosis, how it changes like the relationship to running.
Yeah.
And how it changes like, you know, performance too. Because I imagine to some extent, like we've seen this before with athletes that are struggling with something, like there's a level of acceptance that then breeds into performance. Yeah. I think because like cortisol levels are lower and the body is just in a less stressed out place and feels more free to be.
Yeah. And you know, with autism or my understanding is essentially almost anything with our brain operating slightly differently than maybe the middle of the bell curve almost always comes along with their own superpowers.
True.
Whether that's autism, anxiety, ADHD.
So many people with autism have extreme superpowers. It's beautiful. Yes.
So same with people with anxiety.
Yes.
We would not be doing this podcast. We would not be funny on this podcast unless we both felt really like unsure of ourselves when we were young at times, right? Like that's just the nature of it. Me more than you.
Oh, no. I'm sure we both felt the same unsureness about ourselves. Is that even a word?
Yeah, different types perhaps. But so, you know, whatever your thing is, also look for the flip side of it and embrace that thing and embrace the thing and just let them sit in harmony because those things are amazing.
Let them find love. Okay, this next one is called Wet the Bed. I wet the bed till I was 12, so I typically didn't go to too many sleepovers. However, one night I decided to give it a try as the situation seemed to have been improving. Unfortunately, I had a nighttime oopsie daisies and I panicked. It's a recurring theme in my life. And I didn't want anyone to find out. So I shoved my wet underwear as far as I could into one of the floor vents and never told a soul, except for you two, who I hope wouldn't judge a young, emotionally fragile little boy.
This is so beautiful.
This is really beautiful. Yeah.
One thing I want to share with Leo is that I don't want him to have to not tell me anything.
Yeah, I love that. It's like everything is open discussion and conversation in this house.
Yeah, just in general. Like, and I think all of your friends, you should try to have that relationship with them as much as possible, because I think what you find when you say something like this, like if you did this now, if you did this at 42, you wet the bed and, you know, threw your pants in the vent, almost everyone you know would just be like, look, I fucking love you.
Oh, like, yeah, dude, it happens. Yeah. Yes. Also, can you imagine like the vents of the house? You really got some like, you probably, if you left them in there for long enough, probably get some good like aromatic vibes coming into the house. You're spreading your love throughout all the molecules of the air.
You've heard of potpourri? How about peepery? Yeah, that's amazing. I like it a lot.
That's incredible.
I also wonder if they still wet the bed at all. You know, that type of thing, it's so common. It's one of those things that you just never know what other people go through because people just don't say.
Yeah.
But when you have any amount of a window into other people's experiences, coaches get this, therapists get this, teachers get this, you gain so much compassion because you realize whatever you have going on is shared by so many millions of people and everyone just doesn't tell anybody. So that's one of the reasons we're doing this episode.
Did you ever wet the bed?
Never wet the bed that I know of.
You wet dream the bed. Just kidding. Actually, no, that's for real.
Before this podcast.
Actually, whenever that happens, I'm like, oh man, that was an opportunity.
But is this too gross to talk about?
No, I mean.
Because we can edit it out if it is.
I mean, will you just put a trigger warning on fluids and cover like the whole podcast?
Trigger warning or whatever, or just like embarrassment. So you were asking before this podcast, do you have any secrets you want to share?
Yes.
So I was trying to think of a secret that I would like be too scared to share.
I'm excited for this.
It would be what you just said.
That you have wet dreams?
I mean, I think they're not.
That's a good thing of hormones. I'm proud of those.
Okay. Secret. Well, yeah, they especially happen after rest days.
Yeah, which is great. Uplift hormones.
Megan. In my dream, you rock my world. But the problem is like, I also grew to associate it with weaker athletic performance the next day.
Yes. So you have to think we have very open conversations about this from a performance standpoint. I'm filling this in. So you don't want it to happen on race morning. So we have to prevent that. You can extrapolate.
Exactly.
Is that okay?
No, it's totally okay.
Yes.
It's a secret. It's a secret episode.
Yes,
if someone's 50 minutes into this episode,
they're okay with
this. And also they understand that this is like super vulnerable for me actually. So like to the point that it is a source of anxiety that I will wake up on race morning having this experience because then I know it's not going to be a good experience. In fact, a few of my worst races in my life followed this. And the question is whether it's almost like a association bred of anxiety then confirms itself or if it's a real association because scientifically there shouldn't be any rationale for it, whatever the reason.
Has it happened around races recently? Like I feel like we've kind of fixed it.
Yeah. Well, not recently.
Yes.
It happened in... This is too much.
It's not.
20, when you were pregnant with Leo.
Yes.
Run through time marathon.
Oh, true. Yeah. And you DNF'd that day.
And I DNF'd that day.
You should have been like a DNF due to a wet dream. You know how like.
On Strava? Yeah. Just wasn't my day, but it was my night.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, can I tell you my secret now? I wasn't even going to say this, but you shared a secret.
I'm so pumped.
I'm sorry.
Have you shared this to me?
No. And I'm sorry. I apologize. Okay. A couple of months ago. So we've been like on this process about talking about having a second kid at some point.
Yeah.
And we both decided that like, it's not going to be for a couple of years. Like we want Leo to like grow up and develop and like be a part of this and like be cognizant of having a sibling.
Yeah.
But a couple of months ago, I did a really bad thing that I was ashamed of.
Oh my God.
I scooped. You're speechless. And I panicked because I did it. And I was like, oh, like every part of my soul just wanted a baby like at that very moment.
Was it premeditated? Was something you were planning in advance?
No, it wasn't something I was planning in advance. Well, it was just right there. So I was like, what happens if it just like slides in there? So I like slid it in there. And then I got really, really anxious. I was like, I did a bad thing. I'm a bad person. So I asked ChatGPT. And apparently it's really, really, really hard to get pregnant that way. And so I was like, I'm never going to do this again.
Megan, with the amount that I've been using the hot tub, my guys can't even swim anymore. They've lost the ability. So no, but dude, just tell me that sort of thing.
Because I was like so ashamed. I was like, I'm a liar.
If you're – no, you're not a liar.
I mean, it was like – it was like close. So I was like, I just got to like get it in there.
Look, the point being. So
I found the hole.
Let's game theory this out.
Yes.
So if you had gotten pregnant, were you just going to blame it on me?
I was going to be like, you happened early. No, I wouldn't have told you.
No, you wouldn't have. Yeah. I love it though. No, I love it. I think,
okay, but I'm never doing it again because one, it's not efficacious. So I was like, it's not worth the shame and the anxiety. And two, because I felt so bad about myself. I was like, I lied to David.
You don't have to. About one of the funniest things in all of this though is that you asked ChatGPT.
I know. My ChatGPT search history. Yeah. I'm like dying right now. I'm laughing so hard. I have like pressure in the back of my head.
But just for your knowledge, in the future, You never have to hide that from me. Yeah. You can just tell
me. I feel like you would be on board. You'd be like, if I really wanted that right now, you'd be like, let's do it. Let's actually do it without scooping.
Yeah.
Is that gross?
No.
We said there was going to be a lot of fluids.
Yeah, you did say a lot of fluids. More than planned. Yeah. No, I love you so much. And thank you for telling me.
Yeah. And I won't do it again.
But you're allowed to. Yeah. We got secrets?
Yeah, we all got secrets.
Yeah.
I'm laughing so hard.
Okay, so a good reminder. If anyone's out there, I think the way that Megan responds to mine and I respond to hers is kind of how like all this shit works. Like,
yeah, I know. I don't know why I waited this long to tell you.
Sometimes you got to do emotional scooping.
Yeah. Okay, we got to finish. Let's do this last one. I'll read it.
Okay.
And then we'll go on to stories.
Okay, great.
This is like hilarious and this is so well written. It's called Mannequin. In high school, my English teacher and I co-owned a mannequin. The story could stop there and it would be weird enough. But wait, there's more. There's actually too much more to the story, perhaps for confessionals part two. We had a falling out at the end of the school year. In an angsty, spiteful teenage fury, I stole the mannequin's arm and left class. He asked me where the mannequin's arm went, and I said I had no idea. Well, at that moment, my boyfriend and I were running it over repeatedly with his car. He continued to interrogate me, and I had to get rid of the evidence. So I handed it off to my boyfriend and best friend to hide to the best of their ability, which was stuffing it in the toilet of the boys' bathroom. I stood my ground that it was likely a random kid playing a prank. We reconnected over 15 years later, and he still questioned it, to which I gaslit him. I promise he deserved it. He was a raging narcissist and, in retrospect, a very problematic human for befriending and co-owning a mannequin with a 16-year-old for still being so hung up about a missing piece of plastic, a secret which I will take to my grave. That is outstanding.
It is the best.
Also, I agree. Run that fucker over. This sounds like a problematic situation. Can you imagine co-owning a mannequin with a 16-year-old?
Yes, everything about that part is hard. I don't know if we should comment too much on that because I almost think that's like extreme issues.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And also, I mean, maybe the little bit of commentary there is if you're ever in a situation where a teacher, a coach, anyone like that does something like,
is giving you a mannequin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a problem.
Yes. Yeah.
Back away. But the way they handled it, I truly love.
Oh, I uplift that so much.
And I think we should all do it.
Oh, yes.
Is in life, sometimes all we need are little acts of rebellion. So running over the arm of a mannequin, hell yeah. Burning something in effigy outside of your house when there's no fire warnings?
Yes. Yes.
Hell yes. Screaming at the top of your lungs? Punching things hard that aren't very hard? Like soft surfaces? Hell yeah. This type of thing, I'm really on board with.
Also, I was really on board with them stuffing it in the toilet of the boys' bathroom. I thought that was a creative secret to hide anything.
Yeah.
It was great.
Probably be in an ultra bathroom.
Yeah, right?
An ultra porta potty. That one is really good. Okay, are there any more secrets we want to read? Or we?
There was a bunch about poop. We actually didn't do any secrets about poop, but I feel like we've had enough body fluids for the day.
Yeah, we definitely have had enough body fluids. Oh, yes, I'm seeing these.
Should we go to stories?
Actually, let's do one more.
Okay, great.
This last one, because I think it's important for a lot of runners out there.
Yes, actually, and I align with this. I'll read it. Okay. Group runs. Not sure if this counts as a secret, but I don't like running with other people or even seeing other people on the trail. I really enjoy being alone on my runs, my thoughts, or maybe even an audiobook or podcast. I tried group runs and runs with friends, but it just isn't for me. I even go out of my way on weekend runs to either go early in the morning or in the evening to have most of the trail to myself. And I just tell friends that I only had time early or late in the day and I couldn't meet up with them.
I think it's great.
Oh yeah, I get this.
Your running journey's your own.
Yeah. Also, like when you live a busy life, the peacefulness of the morning run is like, oh, I value it so much. It's amazing. Also, when you look up at people on the trail, it's just an opportunity to sprain your ankle.
I agree.
Yeah.
Never ever look up at people. Never make eye contact.
Yeah. Tell them, say, you're amazing, but don't actually look at them.
Yes.
Don't look at their face.
I'll say the nicest things to people, but I will never make eye contact. Also makes me not be one of those creepy guys that stares at women. So that's a good thing.
I know. You do that aggressively. I was like, did you see so-and-so? You're like, I don't know. I didn't look at anyone.
I didn't look at them once. Yeah. Told them they were awesome. Didn't see their faces. But this in general, like, you don't have to have the same type of running journey as anybody else. Like some people love group runs and need to run with people all the time. Other people like us could kind of like never do it and be totally fine. I only like running with a few people and like certain types of friends. Like for me, it's such a personal time that unless it's one of those rare people in life, like it's just not for me. So I identify with this so much. Like if there were group runs that I had to go to that were with like a bunch of people, I'd be calling out sick all the time. I'd be looking for every excuse not to go to that thing. Guys, I had a wet dream last night.
Yeah.
I can't make it.
I can't make it to the group run.
I have to rest today.
Actually, group runs here in Boulder are like legit fast too. They would scare me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like there needs to be like more safe space group runs where you can have a wet dream and go the next day.
Okay. So we don't have to put that. Okay. Stories. I think we Are there any in particular you want to read? Because we're pretty far into the holiday episode already.
Okay, let's read. There's two.
Okay.
So we're going to read this one called Run Faster because it's hilarious. And then we're going to end on one of the coolest, you know where I'm going.
I know this story.
I think we both aligned on the story and we're like, holy shit, this is great.
I read it to you immediately when we got the email in.
Okay, well, you're going to read the long story and I'm going to read the shorter one.
Okay.
Okay, so this one is called Run Faster. Hi, Dave and Megan. Funny story. Yesterday, I was listening to the regular pod episode from this week and started laughing hysterically when you shouted, quote unquote, run faster, you bitch.
This was me commenting on Megan's pacing when I did my 50 miler.
And what I should say to you to make you run faster. Years ago, when my husband first started running the Chicago Marathon, I was spectating at the final turn when I realized he was just seconds off his goal time. Like a lunatic, I shouted that phrase at the top of my lungs, much to the horror of nearby spectators who clearly did not think it was funny. In the years since, it's become somewhat of a tradition that I shout it out at him when he finishes races. Nearby spectators still think I'm a lunatic, but my husband thinks it's hysterical, and that's really all that matters. The first thing that I said to my husband when he got home last night was that he had to listen immediately to the regular pod episode about this week and tell me when he hears something that reminds him of me. About 30 minutes in, he started laughing his old fool head off. Thanks for uplifting our crazy and for confirming that anything can be a if you have the right mindset.
How good is that?
Isn't that hilarious?
Run faster, you bitch.
Yeah, it's a great phrase.
Yeah. That should be Noah's next love song.
Oh, yeah, with corpses, like run faster to get to those worms.
But I love this so much. And it's just a good reflection on, you know, relationships are, I think, so much, and this doesn't just go for like romantic ones, are just about like essentially looking for every excuse to make something a little bit more of a date than it could be otherwise. Like, you know, we had a kid this year, but I would say it's our most date-filled part of our life ever. And it's because all the little things ended up becoming the really big things of, you know, yeah, we don't have as many candlelight dinners, but we have so much eye sex across the mic here on the podcast, or, you know, when laughing at random jokes and things like that.
Yeah, we don't have candlelight dinners. We have dinners that are just like smeared with like mac and cheese and peanut butter all over the place because Leo is in this phase of just like tipping his plate and just like spreading that food everywhere. It's kind of wild.
Yeah.
But you know, it's a date. It's fun.
You know what it looks like he's trying to do?
What?
Scoop.
Yep.
All the time when we give him peanut butter, he's just trying to scoop it. I didn't know what he was doing this whole time. But man, he's learning from his mom.
This is the wrong hole. Wrong orifice.
It's a good lesson that be careful because you don't know what your kids are taking in. Yes. Sometimes they're taking in.
Actually, he does. I feel like now when we start saying things to him, I've been really careful with like the conversation we've had. I feel like he really understands stuff.
Yeah. I listen to the podcast. I edit the podcast often with Leo in the room.
Yeah,
so very curious to see what this baby's personality ends up being.
I imagine in 20 years, he's like going to listen to the podcast and be like, mom and dad, what the fuck?
Oh, he'll never listen. I mean, think about any kid I think would never listen. Or
that's actually a good point. Yeah. They're like, mom, this is awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is gross.
Yes, it is. Mostly affirm that statement. Okay, well, this is our last story. We'll do a few hot takes after to cleanse the palate. But this is the most beautiful story you'll ever have heard.
Yeah, buckle up. Stay tuned. This is good.
This is incredible. He was a marathoner. She was a competitive swimmer. You know that before we get into that, you know what that reminds me of?
What?
He was a skater boy. Say she you later, boy.
I was singing the first part. He was a girl. He was a boy. She was a girl. Okay. Can I make anything more obvious?
I love that we went to the same place.
I know. Same song.
I went to the chorus. You went to the first verse.
Yes. Yeah. I fucked up the first verse, but I got it right eventually.
Holy shit. We're on the same page.
High five.
He was a marathoner. She was a competitive swimmer. They meet and fall in love while she's studying in his country, and they spend a magical 2 years together. But it's hard and dramatic because they ultimately live on two different continents and struggle to leave their families behind. They break up. It's tragic and they're devastated. They try to stay friends, but we know how hard that is. They write pages long goodbye letters, swearing to talk never again. It's too painful. She writes, quote, let's meet up in 40 years and get coffee and laugh about our wild love story. Later, she moves to his country for other reasons and runs multiple marathons, finding joy in running and thanking him silently for introducing her to the world of running. As always happens after tragic breakups, they both fall in love again with other people. They settle down and both spend 9 years with these new relationships. They secretly memorize each other's goodbye letters and occasionally wonder what could have been. They both remain deeply in love with each other, but in the way that you love a celebrity from afar. There's no chance anything could ever happen, actually. What's done is done. One day, 10 years later, he finds out she's living in his country and that she's become a marathoner, and it rocks his world. He decides to run the city's largest half marathon. He just has a feeling that among the 25,000 runners and thousands of fans that he'll see her. His therapist says, quote, why don't you just text her? But he's a romantic and believes in the power of the universe, so race it is. At mile 7, he swerves to the right to avoid crashing into another runner, and there she is on the sidelines, cheering for her team. She doesn't see him, and he spends the next 6 miles wondering if it was real or a half-marathon-induced mirage. He sends her an email, inviting her to pizza later that night at their favorite spot. I'll stay there until it closes at 1 a.m. She reads the email. Her heart almost explodes. She rushes to the spot, and they don't stop talking until 3:30 in the morning, well after the pizza place is closed, and force them out onto the sidewalk, catching up on 10 years of life. And the rest? Well, there's not really an end to the story, but they're living happily ever after, every day. She is forever grateful to him for making the leap and shooting his shot and running a race just for the possibility of a chance encounter. I guess the lesson is, don't be afraid to break the rules of what you're supposed to do in relationships and just do something wild and romantic. And I'm proud of him for shooting his shot, and I'm proud of me for believing in romance. Yay, love.
Oh my gosh. Yay, love is the best way to end this. Also, this was so well written. They need to make this a story. It was great.
I was saying this needs to be a movie.
Yeah, this is like riveting. I love it. I was like, the first time I read it, I was like on the edge of my seat. I was like, what's going to happen? And also 3:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Also, it's probably international time.
Yeah.
In the US, it'd be like 12:30.
I'm definitely imagining this being in Spain or something like that.
Yeah, I can see.
But what I think interesting about this is that so many love stories seem to have bits of like coincidence or destiny in them,
yeah,
to where they're like, oh, you're the one for me or whatever. And I think what it is essentially if we're in those heightened states, mm-hmm, we can see the tendrils of the universe connecting in ways that we might sometimes not be aware of.
Okay, that's beautiful. That's so beautifully said. I agree.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Was it the tendrils? Did I get you with the tendrils?
It was the universe. Okay. You were like one step away from the abyss.
One step away. Yeah. Almost.
Oh, you're so close.
Worms were almost eating this shit. Not quite. But in this situation, you know, like their love clearly was still burning from before. And so that like heightened state was just so constant that if it wasn't that race, they were living in the same city for an extended period.
This would have
time.
Happened at some point. Maybe it was like 5 months later or 6 months later, but it makes me so happy.
Or 5 months before or whatever.
Yes,
you know, thinking back to the beginning of our love story, I remember being like, this is so weird. There's so many coincidences. Like it's just too many to be like that. And I think part of it is just, it's like we found our person and had to like made that decision right away so that the things that all the coincidences that are happening on a daily basis, we became then aware of.
Or we almost like we manifested them or like actually like created them too, you know?
Yeah. So you're saying our love is an imaginary thing that we made up? Is that what you're saying?
Love is forever and pizza is forever and ice cream is forever, because we actually had a very similar experience where we closed down the ice cream place.
Yes.
They were like, get your asses out of here, our first date. It was very fun.
Even at that time, I would like to go to sleep at 8 p.m. those nights.
So. Same. I know. I was very tired the next day.
Love story.
Yes.
It's so beautiful.
We were not quite 3:30 in the morning, though.
Yeah.
It was like 11:30, which by fair, it's like, I was going to say it's 3:30 by proxy.
So this gives me so much hope for the world.
Doesn't it?
What a cool story.
Yeah.
They're 9-year relationships in between. Eh, an unfortunate part of the narrative.
I know. I did have some questions about that, but we'll look past that.
Yeah. And I also think it's like, I mean, like again, it gets back to our relationship thing. A relationship doesn't have to end in death for it to be a productive, amazing thing for your life.
Yeah, actually, I've seen so many athletes recently that have been navigating like relationship struggles and like rebounding after a long relationship.
Yeah.
And I've seen some of them just blossom. And it's really beautiful, I feel like, to be – it's almost like when you want to do like a long-term follow-up in an exercise physiology study. It's like, well, show me what happens in 5, 6, 7 years. And like, yes, there's these periods of time that are rocky, but I have seen some athletes just like blossom after relationships that have been challenging have ended.
Super blue.
Yes, right, exactly.
Amazing song by Mr. Wives.
If you're so going beautiful. Through a breakup,
listen to that song and then listen to Renee Rapp's song.
Yes, yeah.
That combination will have you jacked up on your future.
Two different vibes, different strokes for different folks with those songs.
Awesome. Let's do a couple hot takes because this is always a fun palate cleanser to end it.
I'm so excited. And then I feel like these were our listener corners, so we can end it on hot takes.
Yes, let's do it. Also, this has been so fun.
I love this.
I love you so much.
Can we just do this as like our normal podcast episode? I know. Well, we need more science.
We need more science. But
we did have science, to be fair, though.
There was.
Yes.
We went into the details of what you learned from ChatGPT.
I know. That is hardcore science.
Yes.
Actually, I didn't know that.
What?
I assumed it was more efficacious than it was.
Yeah. also might be vaguely somewhere in the criminal statutes of
I'm sure it is.
JK, JK. Yes. No, it's not.
I mean, in a different context, not in our relationship context, but I assume in other relationship contexts it could be.
I'm proud of you, Megan.
Proud of me?
You took your future into your own hands.
I did, literally.
Exactly. Yes. Okay, but before we do hot takes, drinkag1.com/swap, S-W-A-P. Athletic Greens has been game-changing for us in every way. Take it in the morning. The micronutrients are so amazing for adaptation. Absolutely love that shit.
It is wildly good. Like, yeah. Blows my mind good. And I feel like it's a little late for this, but if you forgot holiday gifts, you could give it as a subscription to someone and they might love it.
Yeah. Or just be like, you know, everyone looks to make slight changes in the new year. I think Athletic Greens is a good way to do it. You start your day with it, which is what I do, which is what Megan does. And it just kind of sets things out on the right tone because you know you have your multivitamin essentially, which is what it is, covered to start the day. You can keep things simple after that. Don't need to think about it so much. Actually, it's a lot like the protein study where protein study was saying, maybe you don't need to think about your protein quite as much. I think what Athletic Greens is saying is essentially, we're going to take care of all the science for you. And their science team goes over every ingredient in there in great detail, the vitamins, but also the micronutrients and adaptogens about why they are the levels they're at. And then the rest of the day, you can live your life a little bit, not think about it quite so much, which I think is liberating.
I love that. Also, I could see you totally gifting this on like December 28th to someone because you don't really believe in the holidays. You're like, every day is Christmas. Let's give a subscription to someone on December 28th.
Every morning is when I have that Athletic Greens.
Oh, it does feel that way. Awesome. I know. I missed it the other day and I was like, I missed Christmas. This was not good.
Okay, on to hot takes. People who do not sweat should not be allowed in saunas. I really don't want to look at people who barely have a sheen while I am sweating bullets.
And then a sad face.
Yeah.
I know. But here's the thing. Sweating bullets is a badge of honor. Yeah. Own that. As soon as like, I haven't been in the sauna very much. I miss it. I love reading in the sauna and just like pouring sweat over the books. It's so fun. And I get sad if I don't sweat bullets. Yeah.
I like this. I also like the idea of sauna interpersonal dynamics.
Oh, yeah. You could have a whole dissertation on this.
So I've had huge reflections on this recently. And this gets back to I was talking about cancel culture earlier.
Yes, yeah.
And essentially what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to apply sauna theory to the entire world. Okay? So hear me out on this.
I'm with you. Following this so far. Yes.
So when you're in the sauna, you're basically just kind of closed in there with them. And so many people write in and they talk about conversations they've had in the sauna and how they reach new places that they never would have reached before. I think part of it is because, yes, you're sweating. So like maybe some of your guard's down, things like that. But I think a lot of it is because you're locked in this room with people that you never would be locked in a room with, that view the world totally different with you, totally different backgrounds. So totally different things come up. And sometimes it's weird and uncomfortable. Sometimes it actually like brings something new to light that you would never thought of, makes you question things. Similarly, what is a country and a society other than a big sauna where you're locked in with these other people?
Okay, that's an amazing point. But here's my hot take, very similar to the group run discussion.
Yeah.
For the first 5 minutes, I love talking to people in the sauna, but then it's serious business and you better not talk to me because unless it's like a friend. I take it seriously and I'm like, I'm sweating bullets. I can't talk.
You're one of those people that messes up society.
I know. I'm like a deranged fucker. I'm really sorry.
No, I love it. But you know, to land the plane of that metaphor, I think that let's try to give people that same amount of grace.
Yes,
to remember that we're literally in this thing together. Like you're kind of locked in those rooms with people and to try to understand where they're coming from just a little bit. And that's kind of what I've been trying to do. Like all these themes that maybe I just like have been taught to disagree with, things like,
where is this coming from? Because I feel like this was a theme early on in the episode and now it's reappearing. So I feel like your brain is on it.
Yeah. Okay. What it's from specifically is, I was listening, I don't know why I did this, but I went back in time and listened to a podcast by Shane Gillis.
Yeah.
So if you want a really interesting, I think fantastic Netflix comedy special, check out Shane Gillis's recent special. We both loved it. It was very funny. But he was hired for Saturday Night Live in 2019 and he was fired 5 days later.
Mm-hmm.
And he was fired due to things that he said on his podcast that were, you know, could out of context, I think could be hateful. Maybe even in context, someone could argue they were.
Yes. Yeah. I think they probably were. Yeah.
But well, hearing his perspective was actually incredibly eye-opening in the sense of like, look, he's trying to make people laugh. And yeah, he has a different worldview, but like his intentions were not the things that he was accused of, even if they made people feel that way. And the thing is, if it makes people feel that way, maybe it doesn't matter what your intentions are.
Mm-hmm.
But just trying to extend compassion a little bit, like for me, that was an exercise in it. Because like this person who I do respect, who I do think is really smart, who I do think is coming from a good place, you know, had this happen to him in a way that I think like, probably worked out for the best. He's now one of the most famous comedians in the world when he was an unknown before. But it's just me. I've been trying to reflect a lot more on this, like, to try to understand as we're coming up on an election year that, like, the people that might view the world differently than me, especially politically, can also be fantastic people.
Oh, for sure.
That have different perspectives.
And grew up in a totally different context, or like were exposed to different things, or even maybe not. But I think that's amazing. I love it because today you're just like walking around extending compassion to all things.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah. All cookies, all proteins. Yeah.
Yeah. All Trump voters. Yeah. Everyone. Okay. Next up. You would be shocked how many restaurants won't let adults order off the kids' menu without a kid or make you pay more for it. It's BS. I just want chicken strips and mac and cheese, and I don't want to pay $100.
100%. I agree. The kids' menu is an amazing tapestry of opportunity. It's great.
It is so good.
They also give you like legit amounts of food.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a solid portion.
I always thought it was like one chicken tender. It's like, no, we are giving these kids massive amounts of food for just a few dollars. So I say, everyone, order from the kids' menu. Like, there's the Constitution protects it. That's another thing I've learned. I've been going back through. I read the 14th Amendment. You know what the 14th Amendment does? Make sure that you can order off the kids' menu no matter what your age. That's called equal protection, bitches.
Lord. I love that. I can't even type that. But we should actually space our children appropriately so we have a long scale of kids' menu years to really fully enjoy those chicken nuggets.
Is it like 12 and under or 8 and under usually?
I think it's 12 and under.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, if we're on like 4-year increments, it gives us like a long period of time for the 12 and under kids menu. Also, if our kids look young, we can like, when they're 16, we'll be like, they're 12.
Yeah. I say we just do 12 years apart.
Ooh, epic. So I'd be 45, 57, and 69.
Holy shit. It's destiny.
Yeah, it is perfect destiny. Nice. Those numbers add up. And also we'd be like, getting pregnant at 69 would be a spicy thing.
Okay. Very last one of the episode. Hot take. Bitches. Actual female dogs this time need their own Strava category or should not be on Strava at all. I'm a female runner who has worked diligently and ran recklessly to acquire most of the local CRs near my house. One by one, they were taken by a little bitch, a local female dog with a Strava account running with her male owner.
This is hilarious.
Yes.
And also a flashback to our lives.
Yeah.
Because back when Strava, this was like, this must have been like 10 years ago,
yeah.
9 years ago when 10, when Strava was like just starting out, like it was not used as much as it was today. Addie Dog had a Strava account and she took the US Mountain Champs Strava title from David's watch.
So my watch auto uploaded like 2 months later. I don't know why watches do this sometimes. They have mind of their own.
Also, it was really bad back in the day because like now you can like control how it auto uploads. But 10 years ago, it was like auto uploading everything. You had like no control over it. It was hard.
But the way I would do it is I would put the watch on Addie's collar. So even though I was wearing the watch just at that race, because I usually didn't train with a watch very often back then, it uploaded for Addie. And then Larissa, who's now I think the head of marketing.
She's amazing.
At Strava. She's an executive essentially at Strava. She's brilliant. She's like, hey, David, probably not okay.
To have your dog taking the Strava title at the US Mountain
Champs. I had no idea because it just auto uploaded for something 2 months before. So I'm sorry. And Addie Dog, the bitch, apologizes as well.
Yeah. Addie's also, I wanted to take her on a shuffle this morning and she's not really in her running years right now. And it makes me a little sad.
Yeah.
It's hard.
She's doing great though.
She's doing great. She's crushing it as an 11-year-old.
Yeah.
But I really don't think she wants to run even a single mile.
Endurance running has gone by the wayside.
Yes, which is fair. Yeah,
but she likes sprinting.
Yeah, she loves sprinting. She's a high-intensity interval training dog.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe what she's doing to bring it all together is like we said at the beginning of this episode, that nutrition theory is getting rethought. Maybe Addie is rethinking training theory.
Oh,
it's like,
I like
endurance
it.
Running? No. Zone one, zone two? No. Give me zone five, bitches. Fetching or nothing else. That's what Addie's all about.
And big boluses of food.
Such big boluses. Okay, so that was our holiday episode. We love you all so much. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, whatever you celebrate. Hail Satan, if you do that. In other words, we uplift everything. We're trying to learn from your perspectives, even if it's worshiping the great Satan.
Wow. We love you. I love how open you are, David.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
is like true openness. Megan, you're like,
my mind has been open.
Give me love. Give me Satan. It's amazing and great. And I might question it a little bit, but I love you all too so much. This has been so fun.
Yeah.
This has been truly a joy. We should, okay, maybe not like every episode, but maybe like every 10, we should do one of these.
Maybe just sprinkle it in with hot takes.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's like a warm hug. Yeah. I really enjoyed this. And yeah, sorry for our like fluid filled secrets, but they were fun.
But that's most secrets.
That is a lot of secrets. Yeah.
So is there anything before we finish that you kind of want to do with the podcast in 2024? Just putting you on the spot because at this point, who's listening to this on a Secrets episode? Only our deepest fans are here right now.
Nothing super wild. If that's you, okay. If you wanted me to like say something really revolutionary, I think we should just keep doing a lot of the same stuff.
Maybe some more sexy science.
Actually, yeah, I would love some science corners. Maybe we do it with the protein article itself.
Do you think anyone's going to release a podcast this holiday season about how much they hate us?
Oh, true. That did happen last holiday season.
Yeah.
But you know what? We got a little bump in our podcast from it. Not a huge bump because we have more followers than they do, but we did get a bump and it was great. We appreciated it. Yeah. Thank you.
No, yeah. Podcast listens went up and stayed up.
Yeah.
So it was amazing. And, you know, I mean, it's the biggest lesson to take into 2024.
What? Up and stay up? Should we end it there?
We got to end it there. Megan, I love you so much.
We love you.
Thanks for doing this with me.
This was so fun.
You're so beautiful. You're
happy holidays. Every day is a holiday in your journey, and Christmas is extra special to me, so we're bringing it together.
I didn't get you any gifts.
I didn't get you any gifts either. This was a gift.
Perfect.
We love you all. Huzzah.